culture. Some companies have a great one and some don't. Some have employees who are diehard fans that are fully on board, and some have employees that just show up to earn a paycheck. What makes the difference? It's a little metric we call engagement. Today's guest is Tanice Waymire, Chief Engagement Officer at Waymire & Associates. In this episode, we talk about what engagement is and why it's important to make sure employees are engaged both inside and outside of work. When employees feel heard, feel safe, and feel empowered, great things happen. But sometimes they don't, and that's where Tanice shines. Determining where the pain points are and where leadership may be falling short, she and her team have a track record of creating company culture that helps people feel awesome about coming to work and being fully present at home with their families. After this episode, if you'd like to contact Tanice, find her at waymireassociates.com. And as always, enjoy the listen. Hey, you're on the hot mic, Get Arch DevOps with Fritz. I'm here today with Tanice Waymire, the Chief Engagement Officer at Waymire & Associates. How are you doing today, Miss Tanice?
I am wonderful, Fritz. How are you?
I'm doing very well. We finally made it to another month. I know this episode's going to go live later, but today is October 1st for us. We made it.
Can't believe it.
I know. September just went, wee! It was just August. What the heck happened?
It flies, doesn't it? This crazy world, it's flying.
It is. It's flying faster than ever. Well, I'm glad that we got the chance to chat. I know that we've got a mutual acquaintance, friend, Marcy Westcott, who is a former podcast guest, and we had a very laid-back, relaxing, chill atmosphere, and then I met you, and I'm like, all right, oh boy, we're going to be energetic today, so rock and roll. So how?
Let's go.
Let's do it. So you call yourself a CEO, and I'm like, oh, CEO, I'm one of those, and then it's like, oh, Chief Engagement Officer. So what is a Chief Engagement Officer? What does that role do?
You know what? It is all about being fully engaged with the people who matter most inside and outside the office.
Okay.
It's that simple. So what I do is I work with leaders to make sure that they are fully engaged with their teams, okay, with their peers, and at work. But then they still have the energy to go home or leave the office and be fully engaged outside of work with the people who matter the most to them.
Okay.
So hence the Chief Engagement Officer.
Okay. So you're not like cracking the whip and making sure like you better be engaged. Like it's not like that, right?
Not at all. No whips.
Okay. No whips. No whips and chase. All right.
It really starts with creating a deep self-awareness.
Okay.
As a leader, what engagement do I have with my people in the office? And what engagement do I have when I go home? And once you create that deep self-awareness and they start to understand if it is a productive, positive engagement or if it's like destructive and dysfunctional, then you can realize, okay, where do I need to focus and what do I need to work on to make sure it's positive engagement?
Okay, that makes sense. And I mean, with so many companies that are out there and they struggle with this very thing, you know, it sounds like you're talking about like employee loyalty, engagement, obviously, making sure that the work is done well, both inside and outside the office, but it doesn't seem like a lot of places have a good mechanism for measuring that. It's like it's a warm fuzzy. Oh, you'll know it when you see it. You'll feel it. How do you measure engagement? Like how do you know if you're going in the right direction? That's the question I'm trying to ask.
You know what? You actually have to ask your people.
Okay.
There's not, you can create a survey, you can answer a survey, you can ask the people, but how do the people feel? And do they want to continue to follow that leader?
Mm-hmm.
So great leaders create results and they deliver the results, whatever their results are supposed to be. But are they also having the team and the environment and the people who want to continue to follow them and work with them? And do they want to, follow that leader and do the work that they are assigned to do because it's enjoyable?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of times what will happen is if it's a not so good leader, if you don't have that engagement, then the individuals go home at night and they're frustrated and they've had a bad day, and they're to their families, they're talking about this bad day and they're talking about how frustrating and how stressful it was at work. Mm-hmm. And so that impacts their ability to be fully engaged at home. And it's just this cycle. Then they go back to work the next day, and with their team or whatever, they're complaining about their boss because they said something demeaning or the way they treated them or what they were making them do. And it just goes in this cycle. And that doesn't happen when you have a great leader who is connected and in tune with their people mm-hmm. and their engagement level with their people. And you have to ask them. You have to ask the team what's going on and how their leader is impacting them. And I refer to it as ripples. Mm-hmm. You know how you throw a rock in the water
yeah.
and the little ripples go across?
Right,
okay,
right.
You've seen that. Mm-hmm. A little pebble, little rock ripples, a big rock or boulder, maybe some bigger waves. The leader is that center of that ripple. And they have the ability to either disperse a very calm and engaging ripple of water across their team, or it can be a powerful destructive that messes with the sand and makes the water all muddy. And so that leader can do either. And that's what creates the environment and the culture within the company.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense. And I think there are a lot of people that are in leadership positions that don't really realize the effect that they can have. I mean, first, they're not even asking the people. They're not even talking with their team and trying to figure out, like, well, is something amiss here? Is there something wonky? Like, let's find that out. They're just like, okay, I lead, you follow, and we'll all just be happy. Happy money-making corporation. That's
exactly.
Often not the case. Wow.
Well, you know what happens, Fritz, is individual contributors who are high performers delivering awesome results in whatever their role they're in, companies are moving really quickly. Mm-hmm. And they all of a sudden have this opening for a manager or a leader. And they say, oh, I want to get Amanda. She's a rock star.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she's a rock star individual contributor. They throw her into this management role, and because companies are moving so quickly, they don't have the time or the structure in place to give Amanda the tools and resources in order to develop those leadership competencies that she didn't need as an individual contributor.
Mm-hmm.
So what she does is she keeps doing things the way she's always done them. And to your point, I'm the manager. I know what's done. I've delivered results, and this is the way we're going to deliver them. And so unless either Amanda recognizes that or somebody in the organization recognizes that and says, we need to carve out some time to make sure we're developing and coaching these leadership competencies in order for her to be the leader she needs to be, then really we're all setting Amanda up for failure to not be an effective leader. And that's where coaching and developing, either internal or external, can really be beneficial for leaders who have been put into these leadership roles, and they have to have the competencies to be a leader.
Mm-hmm. They do. I mean, true leadership is not it. Let me back up. So I see this happen all the time in technology, in the software mm-hmm. development sector, right? You'll get some people and they're awesome. They could just bang out code. Great. Okay. And then they take on a lead role or they take on a manager role, and it just ends up being, I mean, because they love to write software. They love to execute and get in there and get some stuff under their fingernails, right? Hard day's work. And now as a manager, as a lead, they're not in there doing the stuff that they're really passionate about. They don't really like it. They just got put there because they survived the longest. I've been here 5 years. We have a role open. Get in there. Go get them, kid. And it's like,
yep.
That's not the best approach. But then too, it seems like a lot of corporate culture centers around, well, if I work hard enough, I'll get to a point where I can be a manager. They see that as a role to be like earned because of you know, past success, but the past success doesn't have anything to do with what their future role is going to be. They might be awesome software developers. Yeah, they might be awesome software developers, but their manager skills, their leadership skills are like, they're really lacking. So, right. And then you get these people that also, they sort of resent, it's like, well, we don't really, okay, we get it. We have a team of awesome developers and we need a manager. Okay. We need somebody to like oversee this. We need to bring somebody in from the outside. And then that team is like, well, who's this joker? We don't even know who this dude is. And you're going to have him be over us? Like, what? You know? So it's like, you're hosed either way. You know, how do you get somebody for, I guess, first, like on the one side where you elevate somebody to leadership internally, are there like key things that, okay, leadership 101, like this is what you're going to have to learn. Are there like just some tips that you would have for people that are getting ready to go into a role like that?
There actually are. And I want to, before I answer that, I want to back up on the kind of the technology piece. Okay. I spent 20 years inside corporate organizations all around software and security. So all of my corporate environment was in technology. The one thing that I like to address is the fact that these wicked smart Uber technologists and engineers, they have a personality that is leaning towards data and things and that technology. And like you said, that's where their passion is. And so they have this dependency and this comfort level in technology and processes. They have an underappreciation for the human element of leading. And it's not for any other reason, is that's not where they're comfortable. That's not where their energy is. And that's not what they're accustomed to doing. Mm-hmm. So the first thing that I think you have to do is you have to find out if the person is even interested in being a leader. Because a lot of times, I mean, I've worked with, succession plans in corporate organizations, and we'll go, oh, let's put Bob in that position, or let's put Mary in that position. Has anybody asked Bob or Mary if they're interested in being a leader? Because that's number one.
Yeah.
And then if they're interested and they want to go that route, then you start looking at putting a plan in place. And what do we need to do to help them develop potentially people skills or leadership competencies that maybe they're missing? So you can do an assessment, you can do a 360, you can start to develop where these gaps are, closing those gaps in order to set them up for success in a leadership role.
Okay. Yeah, I guess it is kind of awkward if you're eyeballing somebody for a position and you haven't asked them if they're even interested. It's like, guys, I'm right here, I'm in the room. Awkward. Yeah. I mean, don't just shove them in there. Ask them if they want that. I've got some different questions here for you in a little bit, but we got to take a short break for a sponsor message. And when we come back, I've got some questions about how you do what you do. So stay tuned here. We'll be right back in just a minute. Okay. And we're back. So before the break, we were talking about, well, if you want to hire somebody and promote them internally for a leadership position, I mean, there's some things that you got to do first. First and foremost, ask the person if they really want to do that sort of thing. If they're not interested, well, that saves you some time. And then if they are interested, okay, then let's prep them for leadership training. What if it's somebody from the outside? Is it the same process, or is it different because, oh my goodness, who's this guy? Like, how would you go about doing that?
You know, the thing that I would do is if you really believe you need to hire somebody from the outside to fill a leadership role, I think it's even more critical that they have those leadership competencies. Mm-hmm. So some proven skills and abilities in those leadership competencies. Okay. But what I would suggest is once that leader is hired, is putting the leader and their team through what I refer to as an onboarding or an assimilation for the team. And it's not the components about, you know, how do I get into the systems and where's the break room? It's not all of that training. Yeah. It's a training that is about how do we accelerate the development and cohesiveness of this team as quickly as possible? How do we get ramped up as quickly as possible. And I have a process that I actually take leaders and teams through in order to identify those things and get them moving in the right direction and get rid of that dysfunction as quickly as possible.
Nice. So let's talk about process a little bit, because I'm curious. If you go into a company, and let's have a nice round number, it's 100 employees. The whole company is 100 employees, and they brought you in because they're aware that things suck. They just don't have the engagement, right? And it's like, okay, if you're going in, I'm sure you're going in with like a lot more information, but if you're not sure where the problem is, or not, I don't want to call them problem people, but you know, the hot spots in the company, you know, there's certain people that are just kind of like messing with the flavor. You know what I'm saying? Like how would you figure out how to get the company to have good engagement across the board?
Well, the first thing I do is start talking to people. I do it through either one-on-one interviews, focus groups, just really talking to people and getting them comfortable to trust me that my intention is to help them have the best culture and best environment possible. Okay. And leadership does start at the top. So I'm going to talk to the leader and the leader of the organization, whether it's, you know, a CEO, president, whatever their title is, they have to be demonstrating that they want this best culture possible. Mm-hmm. And so an introduction from the CEO or the president to the organization that my purpose is to create that best place to work environment is the start. But then it's my job to let people know that they can trust me through confidential conversations, because what I'm doing is looking for common themes and patterns across the conversations that I have in order to help me identify where some of the biggest challenges could be. Then we start working on those particular challenge spots and areas.
Gotcha. Gotcha. So it sounds like you would just make an effort to talk with every single person ultimately.
Depending on the organization, yes. I mean, that can take a lot of time and energy. And that's why sometimes it's one-on-one and sometimes it's what I call focus groups. Mm-hmm. Maybe you get a department together, and I would say without the leader, because then they're more open and transparent a lot of times. And you do a focus group, you ask them questions and you get them talking about the organization, and you can get information that way as well. When I do focus groups, I also always offer, if you would like a one-on-one conversation, let me know, because sometimes people aren't comfortable in that focus group environment and they may have something very critical or important that they want to share. And So that transparency is important.
Yeah. It's important to create a safe space for them to spill the tea and tell you what's really going on. Oh yeah. Things are great. Oh my goodness. I can't believe what the heck.
Exactly. And you know what's interesting is Google did a research on the top five elements of high-performing, high-productive teams. And one of those five was psychological safety. So the psychological safety within the environment and within that team creates an environment where people can ask questions, where they're not afraid to ask for help, where they're not afraid to admit mistakes that they made. And so creating that environment in the organization is critical, but creating that trusting environment with me is something that I strive to do, to let them know that I am a safe place for them to let me know what's going on.
Awesome. Well, I was typing just now because I'm like, this is a good note. And at the end of the episode, I take my notes together and say, hey, let's do an intro blurb that talks about what we're getting ready to discuss. And that's a really good one. You know, creating a safe space where people feel like psychologically they can come to you about stuff. That's something that normally takes years of constantly, you know, dripping away. And you just come in and you're able to build that very quickly. And that's an amazing skill. You've got a gift.
Well, I try, that's for sure. But one of the things that I've learned, because I've done some research and some certifications around neuroleadership, mm-hmm. and it is the brain science. And yep. Our brains help us a lot, but they also get in the way. They're very powerful and they're very fragile. And so a lot of times when the environment isn't a psychological safe environment, it's really only because our brain, that fragile emotional piece of the brain, that amygdala, is getting triggered. And the conversations or the language that's happening is creating what I call the threat space, where we kind of shut down a little bit. And so when leaders have that language, it's not a productive environment for all of their employees. And so we have to make sure that that language is not in the environment and triggering some of their employees where it puts them in an unproductive state of mind.
Yeah. So if the leadership is using a lizard brain language, then it's like, don't do that. Don't say that. We don't do that here.
Exactly. Exactly. No lizard brain language.
I love it. And
you know, some people aren't necessarily bothered by lizard brain language, but more people are, and you have to know that. And what that comes to is that comes to really knowing your people. And if you have a team of five people, you have to understand what motivates and engages each one of them, because it's different for each one of them. And then you have to lead them based on their style of what's going to make them highly productive.
Okay. I'm learning so much selfishly about what you're doing. And I also found out that we've got a lot in common that I wish I can get into, but we're almost out of time. But we're going to have a follow-up conversation, like maybe just over Zoom, not on a podcast, but there are some tricks I've picked up over the years that apply well to like trying to foster change, not like, hey, we want to change the culture, but we want to adopt a technology, or we want to change how we're doing work, right? And it's like, oh my goodness, so scary. Like, how do you help people feel good and safe about that? And I think there's a lot of overlap, which I didn't realize until today, but
right,
we'll have to talk about that some. So I got one more question, and then I want to ask like how people can get in touch with you if they want to have a conversation and figure out how to get people out of their lizard brain. But if you come into an organization or a company and you're like, all right, well, are there things about people that you can like look at them and say, okay, this person is operating in that lizard brain mindset, right? Like you could just tell by looking at them, the way they're acting, their body language or something. I imagine you probably could. You have an eye for that sort of thing. Is that correct?
Well, it does take some observation.
Okay. So
typically what I like to do is observe them in their team meetings or their staff meetings.
Okay.
Hearing the language and seeing them in their environment. If I could be a fly on the wall, it would be amazing, because a lot of times when you're observing a leader, they're on their best behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So how can you observe that leader when they're behaving naturally? And a lot of times that's where you go to get the feedback. That's where you go. When I coach a leader one-on-one, I do stakeholder interviews. Mm-hmm. And what that is it's an interview with their key stakeholders, maybe their boss, their peers, and their team, to find out what are the behaviors of this leader that are effective, that help them be productive and help you as someone who works with them be productive and engaged. And what are the things that get in their way? Because by finding those things out, then you can consolidate that information. You can go back and you can coach that leader through, okay, how can you keep doing the things that are working for you? And how can we adjust and adapt the things that are getting in your way or your team's way of being effective?
Okay. All right. And then if you run into people like that, once you've established like, okay, I've listened to what they're saying, I've listened to their feedback, I've got a pretty good idea, like who's the most dissatisfied. Do you talk with them first or do you talk with them last or what do you do?
I actually just gather the information and then I talk to the leader and I talk to them about their behaviors. I don't share with who said what.
Mm-hmm.
What I encourage the leader to do is once they have bought in to their behaviors and what they want to work on, I encourage them to go back to their key stakeholders who I spoke with and let them know, I've heard you. I'm going to work on the way I speak to my team in meetings. I'm going to work on my communication style, whatever the behavior is. I'm going to work on that, and I want you to hold me accountable. And so then we put a strategy in place to work on changing that behavior. And behavior change is hard. It is the hardest thing that we can do. And so you also dig a little bit deeper in order to find out what is the value of making that change. The value could be, I keep my job, I have a more engaged team, I deliver better results, I go home at night and I'm not stressed and frustrated with my family, I can spend quality time with them. Mm-hmm. And it's different for different people. So you look at those different things, you figure out what's motivating, what is the purpose and the value for that individual leader in order to make the change that they want and need to make. And then that's the material that you have to work with, because it's different for everyone.
Oh my goodness, this is so exciting. I geek out about this sort of thing. And over the years, I've talked with some folks that are in like the behavioral sciences, IO psych type of thing. And I had somebody ask me, they were like, what do you do? And I explained what I did and like why we're different and stuff. And they're like, you're almost doing like behavior analyst stuff in that tech space. And I'm like, I guess. I mean, I want people to trust me, you know, and you want people to trust you, because both of us were asking people to do things differently. We're asking them really to change their behavior and get a desired outcome. Everybody wants to be successful. Right. But not everybody wants to do what it takes to get there. They don't want to make the change. And it's like, okay, well, here, let's present some information. Here's some data. Here's where you're at. Here's where you're going. If you want to change, then here's what you can do different.
Yeah.
And it's hard.
Yeah, it is hard. And, you know, one thing I think additional that we have in common is that technology space. Mm-hmm. Technology is in a VUCA world. It's volatile. It's uncertain. It is always changing. And being in that space, stopping long enough to think about changing a behavior in order to change an outcome, mm-hmm. who has time for that stuff?
Yeah.
And so that's where a lot of it comes in, is let's take the time that we have together to pause for a moment. And it doesn't have to be a lot of time, but it can be very, very valuable time on a weekly or biweekly case in order to stop and reflect and think about what you're doing that's working and what's getting in your way and what are we going to do differently.
Yep. Yeah, too often it seems like we are mashing the gas pedal and we're like, well, no, we can't let off the gas so that we can change gears. We've got stuff to do. And it's like, well, there's a maximum speed you can go. And if you try to go faster, you're going to be damaging yourself. And in this case, you're damaging your mental state, your company culture, the desire people want to actually come to your company and work with you and for you. It's like, there's so many things that are involved. You have a cool job. Yeah. Do you want to trade? Let's trade.
You know what? I would trade, except I don't want your client. I don't think your clients want to trade. Me and software don't probably. I don't speak that language.
You're like, me and nerds, we don't get along. It's okay. You can say nerds. You can say the N-word on this show. I don't care.
My gosh. No, I get along with nerds. I just don't get along with the software and the coding component of it.
And that's where the
gap is. Speaking that language, my entire family, I said earlier that I've always worked in software and security. And so my family calls me, how do I do this problem on my computer that's messing up, you know, with whatever? And I'm like, why do I know the answer to that? Well, don't you work in technology? Not quite that part of technology.
Yeah. Just Google it. Just Google it. That's what I do. I Google. I spend half my time coding and half my time on Google figuring out, like, how do I read in lines from a file in Ruby? Oh, well, there it is. I should probably just bookmark it.
That's right.
Well, this has been fun, Tanice. Now, how do people get a hold of you? Because I think some folks are going to be listening to this and going, she really knows her stuff. I ought to have a talk with her. How do they reach you?
So I can be reached at waymireassociates.com, and I will spell that because it's okay. Not the easiest. Wehmeyer associates.com. And on my website, you can obviously find out information about me, but in the top right-hand corner, there's also a Let's Connect and Explore button. Mm-hmm. You can click that, schedule some time right on my calendar, and we can talk about what we can do in order to help you as a leader, help your company, if it's leadership, you know, if someone's in HR or learning and development or spaces like that. That I can help with the entire organization or leaders individually. And I love talking to people. Those are, Let's Explore are completely complimentary free conversations. And I enjoy having those to make a connection. Sometimes it's just a connection that's going to add value to, you know, something you do. And sometimes it turns into a longer relationship.
Yep. Awesome. Waymireassociates.com. I'm going to put that in the show notes for the folks at home. Perfect. And they also heard us talking about it just now. So you got the website. If you're wanting to find out some more about what Tanice does, go there, set up some time to chat. And she's awesome to talk to. I've been talking to her for half an hour and I learned some cool things from you. So, well, thank you for your time. I really appreciated us getting together today.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Awesome. All right. Well, that sounds like a clear next step to me. We'll have to get that scheduled for next season. You're like one of the last ones in this season. So
awesome.
Awesome.
Wrapping it up on a strong note.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, take care and I hope you have a good rest of the day. All right.
Absolutely. You too, Fritz. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Did you hear this episode and go, wow, I'm a founder and all my friends keep telling me I should get on a podcast? Would I be a fit? Yes. Yes, you would. Every single person who steps out of their comfort zone to build their dream has an amazing story to share. And this is the platform for you to do that. If you want to talk about your dream, what led you to start your endeavor, what successes you've had or challenges you've been pitted against, this is the podcast for you. So head on over to archdevops.com/podcast to find out how to get on. And also check out our free tip sheets on guesting or even hosting your own podcast. This is Fritz, your host, hoping to meet you on the other side of the hot mic at Arch DevOps.